Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Chris Hutton. Let's get into our first news story of today, and this comes from a News24 expose on the city of Joburg, where News24 claims that not only is City Power the city-owned entity which provides power services to Johannesburg, costing the city huge amounts of money, and to the point that it is making it financially unviable. The mayor has allegedly been aware of the perilous position, but has kept reports indicating how bad the situation is from the Joburg City Council and the public. According to the News24 story, quote, City Power, wholly owned by Johannesburg, has been hampering the municipality's ability to provide services. Mayor Dado Moreiro has been aware of the perilous position, but has seemingly concealed the information. City Power is being given apparently around about 3 billion rand a year to prop up what has been described as the utility's material decline in financial performance, and that this is affecting Johannesburg's financial sustainability and its service delivery objectives. Now, anyone who has lived in Johannesburg knows, particularly in some of the older suburbs, that when the power goes out, City Power, when there's like a rainstorm or something bad, that City Power comes under a lot of stress. And when you ask the technicians, they will often say, there's no money for this replacement. We have to do a patch job here. We have to do a patch job here. The situation in terms of service delivery in Johannesburg is at, I think, a bit of a crisis point. And this is a crisis that only seems to have been developing through the year. However, Chris, to me, what's really concerning here is that if it's true that the mayor is, in fact, you know, making the situation look better than it actually is, the city's crisis has only just begun. What are your thoughts on this story?
So it's one thing if you as an individual or as a city, if you're approaching an iceberg, right? It's one thing if you can see it in the distance. Obviously, you can just see parts of it above the surface. And because you understand what icebergs are generally like, the majority thereof is underneath the surface. Now, what if you're just effectively driving on the ocean, if you're driving blind, that you don't know what is in the fog around the next corner? How do you prepare, if at all? Obviously, I'm not saying it's ideal to hit an iceberg, but to just have some information, to plan accordingly, to make sure that emergency rafts are in place, that the process is in order, all that kind of thing. That's one thing. If you're just going to hit it blindly, what does that do to a city, to it in terms of the short term, but the long term viability, possibility of business investment, of shoring up your infrastructure, of attracting new investment, of attracting skilled individuals from other provinces and from around the world to come to your province and to your city. I mean, if this is true, I don't think the word dereliction of duty, the phrase, is strong enough. I mean, if you talk about violations of municipal laws, sort of good governance, the very basics of that kind of thing, your responsibility of holding that public office and your responsibility to your citizens, to businesses, to ratepayers in your city, all of those things clearly then just fall by the wayside. Now, I know that this kind of challenge, I don't want to underestimate the size of this kind of thing that an entity like City Power faces just on its own, never mind Joburg Water and all the other various Johannesburg municipal entities. But you can't in any way start to deal with a problem if you pretend it doesn't exist, if you wish that reality is different from what it is. And for a person as senior as a mayor of a city in the province that is responsible for over 30% of South Africa's GDP, that does not bode well for the provinces or for the city's fortunes, I think.
That's exactly right. And of course, as with so many of these issues, when you kind of begin to trace back the root causes of what has developed into these crises, you almost always find the same policy reasons over and over again. In this case, I think it would be very difficult to argue that the BE premiums on procurement, which drive up the cost of procurement, as well as CADA deployment, have not very specifically contributed to this crisis. The moment you start to put political favoritism and rewarding people for political loyalty over something like merit or competence, you begin to see just deterioration in the entire system. That doesn't matter whether you're doing that at a technician level or at a management level, you will immediately see the misallocation of resources. And what happens? Well, residents get impacted. Businesses get impacted. The poor get impacted. Sometimes people even die because the infrastructure is dangerous and can kill them. Or maybe the infrastructure isn't rolled out in the first place and people have illegal connections. There are so many downstream effects of all of this, but if you trace them up to the root, you almost always find these overarching policy decisions as the root cause. All right, let's move on to our next story. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday, but there's now been this sort of pushback on DA Minister of Communications, Tsoli Malatsi, who has drafted up new regulations which move towards reducing the burden on foreign companies who want to invest in South Africa's infrastructure. The main thing here is that the new regulations will mean that instead of just giving over 30% of the company to a local BEE partner, foreign companies will be able to score the sort of requisite BEE points through other projects, through other services and things that they might deliver to underprivileged communities. This has provoked quite a lot of negative reaction from both the ANC in the communications portfolio and also from MK, who called the minister before parliament to account for these regulatory changes. Speaking in defense of the changes, Malatsi said that this is not a specific targeted program that will, you know, only benefit Starlink, that the regulatory changes will make it easier for many internet companies from overseas to start delivering services here, satellite internet companies. And I think, to me, this alleviates one of my major concerns. I was concerned that there would be a special carve-out just for one company, which I think would have distorted the market in some not very good ways. But I think that this is exactly right. When you create general rules that are better for business, that's definitely a step in the right direction. Chris, what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I share your inclination. One ideally wants as little regulation as possible. Where there is regulation, you want it to be as transparent and evidence-based and fit for purpose as possible. These changes were already in the works before President Ramaphosa's meeting last week with U.S. President Trump and all the associated discussion around it. So in terms of optics, it does look then like, oh, now it's being pushed through to make this sort of carve-out. But for the minister, for his party, and I think for the GNU as a whole, and just South Africa's sort of investment case and viability, this kind of thing shouldn't be done just to make sort of special terms or a kind of special playing field for one company and then playing field for others. Also, if that sort of route is followed, if that is reality, the sort of resistance it creates and the impetus and evidence it gives to especially vested interests who are already going to and are pushing back hard against this. So telecommunications companies in South Africa who will, you know, use different rhetoric to justify why they're pushing against it. But in fact, they will be concerned about competition, not only from Starlink, but from other companies then that come and operate in South Africa, not least of which, of course, Amazon, which is playing in a similar kind of technology and a similar kind of product that they are also in various stages of rolling out across the world. So, yeah, for real reform, I think, to take place in this particular sector, but also for the economy as a whole, you ideally need to make sure that it is as fit for purpose as possible. Otherwise, it is almost in a way going to undermine itself and just benefit sort of cronyist interests in a way.
Yes, 100%. And if there's one thing South Africa's economy does not need, it is more cronyism, unfortunately. All right, let's move on to our last story of today. And I must say, this one took me kind of by surprise. Excuse me, I'm a bit far away from the microphone there. This one took me a little bit by surprise because I only recently remembered that Coleen Makabule, former Speaker of the Johannesburg Council and one-time leader of the South African Rainbow Alliance political party, which did not do very well in the last local government elections, has seen a very rapid rise since joining the MK party. Not only was she putting out media statements attacking the Starlink or the regulatory changes that would help Starlink yesterday, but she has apparently now replaced Mr. Money, who was formerly the chief the chief whip of MK, as the new chief whip. This is means that she'll be the sort of second in command, I think, to John Hlophe, who is the current sort of leader of that. And there was some talk a while ago of John Hlophe and Manu having a falling out, so I wonder if this is downstream of that. But MK thanked Mr. Manu for his dedication to the MK party, and they said that they hoped their MPs would support the leadership transition. Makabule said that this moment is a testament to the progress we are making as a party that values the contributions and leadership of women. You know, there's this famous sort of quote from Winston Churchill, I think it was. I'm not sure if it was from him, but that's who I've heard it attributed to, that when looking at Soviet politics, it's like watching two cats fighting underneath a rug. You don't really know what's happening until one of them emerges victorious. The MK party feels a little bit like that right now. Do you think this means anything for how the party is developing internally? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think if you try to look at it from an MK's future viability point of view, if it is just the case that it's already becoming entrenched, that you get ahead not by growing the party or what you do in terms of advancing its values and its vision, whatever that might be. And ideologically, of course, many people disagree with, but let's assume you're on board with all that. If this is the way in which individuals are gaining favor for themselves and gaining positions, that doesn't bode well for the future's stability, number one, and just growth of the party. So, of course, did very well last year to come in third biggest in the elections. But it's one thing to start a party and another thing entirely to keep it around for a year or five or 10 even. I mean, we've got the local government elections next year. That requires serious boots on the ground, building of branch capacity, all that kind of thing. So it's one thing to have these individuals from a sort of national optics point of view, and you sort of collect this, you've got this collection of names and sort of recognition. But to go into communities, to build the connections, to build long-term trust by people who voted for MK and then who think it's kind of viable alternative going forward, that's going to require something a bit more serious than what is happening. It seems to be happening at this point in time. So just in terms of seriousness, in terms of gravitas, and just shifting away from the sort of central force that is former President Zuma, If all that's keeping it together is him sort of allocating positions and favoring those who try and weasel their way into his good graces, that's not going to do well for the party in the long term, which is, I mean, it's great for its opponents, especially I think for the EFF that would want to regain some of the support they lost to MK, especially on the sort of left, hard left fringe of South African politics. But yeah, overall, I don't think very good signs for MK, at least in the medium to long term.
Yeah, no, I think the EFF is really trying to kind of regain its mojo now. You know, they've been down in the dumps, and they're using the fact that they were, you know, the focus of that White House meeting to try and claim that they are, in a sense, the true leaders of the far left revolution. And the implicit call there, I think, is that MK are just pretenders to the throne. Now, Malema says that this is, you know, restored the EFF to the front line of the fight against the imperialists or whatever. But I think it remains to be seen yet whether this is going to translate into something that voters actually care about. It's entirely possible. I think it will also go the other way, that a lot of South Africans kind of think, I don't know, this Malema guy. I mean, it was fine when he was just doing it and speaking truth to power here, but now it's embarrassing us on the international stage. I don't know. I think we are too far out from elections to really know for sure. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Wrap. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.